ship dove down into the repulsor chamber, moving aggressively, but not so fast that Ebrahim, standing on the Falcon's co-pilot seat, wasn't able to see the insignia painted on the underside of its fuselage. A stylized human skull with a knife in its teeth. "Human League!" he cried out. The enemy ship dropped down to a fast assault-style landing. Burly figures in combat gear were tumbling out of the attack boat's hatches even before it had stopped bouncing on its landing legs. Suddenly, huge hands were scooping Ebrahim out of the seat, tossing him out of the way. Chewbacca scrambled into the co-pilot's chair and started powering up the defense systems.
"The children are aboard!"
Macha shouted.
"Activate the shields!"
But it was too late. The Falcon was surrounded by troops standing inside the shield perimeter. A tall, heavy-set, bearded figure stepped out of the assault boat, an unpleasant smile on his face.
"Sar Solo," Ebrahim said. "It's him."
"That's our dad's cousin?" Anakin asked.
"That is his cousin, and yours, child," said Marcha. "But I doubt you will gain much joy from knowing him."
Dragon Sal Solo could not have been happier. It was a gift from the gods. He strode about his new possession, admiring it, thinking of all it could do and do for him. At last he had his hands on a planetary repulsor. His eyes strayed to the Millennium Falcon. What a bonus it was. Grabbing the Falcon by itself would have been enough to pay Han Solo back for the crime of escape, but to find Han's Wookiee and his children aboard as well, what could be better? Now Thrakken could manipulate Leia Organa Solo herself. But holding the children would do no good, unless Han Solo and Leia Organa Solo knew about it. The communications jamming would have to come down. Admiral Hortel Ocelage watched on the long-range scanners as the Human League assault boat plunged down the mouth of the repulsor. It was galling to be beaten to the punch, but one had to admire the audacity of the assault boat's commander, diving his ship down the barrel of a weapon that could have reduced his craft to dust in milliseconds. But that was a fast, hard assault landing, not a slower, safer arrival at a secured base. Almost as if the other side had been as surprised as Ocelage himself. Almost as if the Human League had been trying to do what he had been trying to do, take advantage of an unexpected opportunity to move in on the planetary repulsor. Ocelage had the feeling that something else was going to change here. And change could usually be exploited. He turned to the ensign at his side.
"My compliments to Captain Semek at the controls. Tell him the intruder will move into an orbit synchronous with the planet's rotation.
Well out of line of sight from the repulsor." Luke stepped out into the huge airlock where the Lady Luck and his X-Wing were waiting and sighed in relief. Jenica had got them here faster than he had thought possible, and with that clock counting down toward the death of Bavo Yegan, there was no time to waste. He thought he knew what he had to do next, but he had to be sure. The others watched as Luke sat down, shut his eyes, and concentrated, extending his senses as far as possible. "Leia is on Salonia," he said at last. "No doubt about it, I can feel her there. My guess is that Han is with her, and probably Mara Jade as well. The three children, Chewbacca and the Falcon, are on Drow. It's hard to explain, but I get the sense, the feeling, that all of them, Leia and the kids and the people with them, are all prisoners of one sort or another."
"Then we better get cracking and bust them out," Lando said briskly. "You go to Leia. I'll fly Garriel and Jenica back to the Bakuran fleet, where they can inform Admiral Ocelage of what we've learned. After I've dropped them off, Lieutenant Kalenda and I will fly on to Drawl and see what we can do about getting to Chewbacca and the kids."
"I don't like the fact that we're leaving Centerpoint unguarded," Jenica said.
"What could we do, anyway?"
Lando said. "Wait for someone to land and then sneak up and kick them in the shins?" Jenica cocked her head. "Point taken." Luke stood up. "In that case," he said, "I suggest we do what we can right now."
"We have you, but we'll not keep you long,"
said Klavitz, speaker for the Overden. She sat at a table opposite Mara, Leia, and Han. Drachmas sat at Klavitz's side, demonstrating by her presence that her clan had submitted to the victors. She did not look happy to be there.
"We need merely come to certain straightforward agreements, and then all may be on their way," said Klavitz.
"We're not going to come to your agreements," Leia said wearily. The morning had lengthened into late afternoon, and they were in the sumptuous interior of the prison villa. For prison it had proved to be. The Overden had thrown a force field around the Jade's fire, and guards around the force field.
"All we ask is that you are acknowledging reality. We are free. We are no longer of the New Republic. Do you not agree, friend Drachmas, that complete isolation would be the greatest of blessings?"
"Oh, yes, Eminent Klavitz," Drachmas said,
clearly feeling miserable and humiliated.
"My den will rejoice with me in knowing we are free of all outside influence."
"I'm afraid you're no good at lying, honored Drachmas," Han said. "I've seen dead people who are more convincing."
"I insist that we return to the main point," Klavitz said. "Recognize the freedom of Celonia under the guidance of the Overden, or never leave this planet alive."
"You've got yourself a deal," Leia said. Klavitz looked toward her eagerly.
"Then we have persuaded you?"
"Absolutely. We pick the second choice, the one about not leaving alive. Go ahead and kill us all, right now."
Klavitz sighed wearily and extended her claws to drum them on the tabletop. It was hard to miss just how sharp those claws were.
"I can see that we're going to be here for a while."
"Boy, you get out of touch for 5 minutes and everything changes," said Lando as the Lady Luck flew clear of the Mammoth Centerpoint airlock. "Where's the intruder?"
"What's the intruder?" Jenica asked.
"Biggish sort of thing. A ship. A Bacuran light cruiser. It should be hard to miss, but I can't spot it."
"Have you looked in the last place you had it?"
Lando smiled. "I did just now, and it wasn't there."
"So where is it?"
"At a guess, something has happened, and Admiral Ocelage has charged off bravely to do something about it, whether it needs doing or not."
"I'm not sure I appreciate your tone, Lando," said Gariel.
"I'm not sure I appreciate the way Ocelage takes chances." Jaina let out a sigh. Things were very bad. The prisoners sat sad and forlorn and rather crowded in the mobile stockade, unable to do anything but watch as the Human League troopers and technicians unpacked their gear, obviously getting ready to settle in for a long stay. The mobile stockade was really nothing more than a force field generator designed to stay outside the force field itself so that those held in the field could not get at the generating machinery. The force field was transparent, however, and those inside could see the generator plain as day. This did not sit well with Anakin. The idea that he could see but could not touch the device that was holding them prisoner seemed to upset him more than the fact that he was a prisoner. The other two children tried to keep him distracted, but it was not easy. Chewbacca paced back and forth from one side of the force field containment to the other. He was forced to watch the Human League techs poking around the Millennium Falcon. Once or twice a tech would open a panel and laugh out loud at what he saw. It was difficult to restrain Chewbacca at those moments. Thrakken Salsolo marched over from the assault boat. A Human League tech was by his side carrying a holographic recorder.
"Good afternoon to all of you,"
said Thrakken, in that voice that was so close to Jaina's father's, and yet so far away.
"Hello,"
said Jaina, and Jason muttered a hello as well. Anakin took one look at his father's cousin and burst into tears.
"Why are you here?"
Jason asked, glaring at Thrakken.
"What do you want?"
"Oh, not much at all. Not much at all. I merely need some hollows of all of us together."
"Why do you want our hollows?"
Aunt Marcia demanded. Thrakken smiled.
"I should think that would be obvious even to a member of your species. I'm in the process of turning off the communications jamming. Then I will broadcast the hollows to demonstrate that you are my prisoners. While I doubt anyone will much care what happens to a pair of rotund drawl or a psychotic Wookiee, I expect that Han and Leia Organa Solo will be inspired to more reasonable behavior if they knew I had their children and the planetary repulsor.
Marcia, Duchess of Mastagophorus, drew herself up to her full height and glared at their jailkeeper.
You are on the verge of a most serious error. For your own safety, I urge you to reconsider this act.
You are scarcely in a position to make threats, Drawl. Save your breath.
Very well. May the consequences be on your head alone.
For the briefest of moments, the bland smile flickered off Thrakken's face, but then it was back.
Now I want the three children on this side of the stockade, closest to me. And you three aliens on the far side.
The two Drawl and Chewbacca exchanged looks. It was clear they had no real choice. They moved to the opposite side of the stockade. As the technician made adjustments to the holo recorder, the children went over to the vertical wall.
Has he really made a mistake, Aunt Marcia?
Gina asked.
Oh, yes. Very much so, child.
What are you saying, Chewie?
Gina asked. Chewbacca looked around to make sure no Human League trooper was close enough to watch. Then he moved as close as he could to the vertical wall and opened his hand. He had a pocket comlink. Jaina grinned up at Chewbacca.
I should have known. With all that long fur, you could hide practically anything on your body. And besides, who's going to frisk a Wookiee?
But what good does that do us?
Jason asked.
That thing doesn't have any range at all. You're forgetting someone who is quite nearby,
Ibrahim said.
Someone who has built-in communications equipment. Someone who is probably getting most tired of waiting.
In all the commotion, Ibrahim had had time to stuff Q-9 into one of the Falcon's smuggling compartments. His instructions had been simple.
Wait at least 14 hours. Do not emerge until it is safe to do so. At that time, determine the best method for coming to our aid, and carry out that method.
Cariel Captison stood on the hangar deck of the Sentinel, next to the Lady Luck. I don't think there's any argument about what we should do, she said. We go on to Drawl, and rendezvous with the intruder. After they had discovered that the intruder had mysteriously disappeared, they had docked at the Sentinel and learned that Admiral Ocelage had gone ahead to investigate an unknown assault boat landing on Drawl.
Absolutely, said Lando. If someone has already found a repulsor there, that is the place to be.
Not for me, it isn't, said Jenica. Sentinel and Defender are keeping watch on Centerpoint Station, and I'm the closest thing to an expert on Centerpoint they're going to get. I stay here.
Kalenda cocked her eyebrow. I'd say my place is with Admiral Ocelage. Gariel and Kalenda said their farewells to Jenica and boarded the Lady Luck. But there was something more Lando wanted to say to Jenica Sonson. In fact, she said it first. Is this the part where you tell me how you never met anyone like me and how you want to get to know me better? Lando couldn't quite tell if she were mocking him or daring him, warning him off or urging him on. He sighed, arching an eyebrow.
There was a time, not very long ago, when I would have said those words and meant every one of them. At least while I was saying them. The problem is, I did say something very like it to another lady recently, and I did mean it. The funny thing is, for the first time in my life, I'm catching myself still meaning it. I might even mean it for a long, long time. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to back off.
Jenica looked surprised, though not half as surprised as Lando felt. You know, that might be the classiest speech of its kind on record. I think you've got yourself a very lucky lady out there. And I don't mean the Lady Luck. She stuck out her hand to shake, and Lando took it. Take care of yourself, Lando. I must admit, I almost wish you had made a play for me.
As Luke Skywalker left Center Point, he eased the X-Wing's throttle up to maximum thrust.
The dance of the orbits had put Solonia about as close to center point in the double worlds as it ever got, but the distances were still great, and he was in a hurry. Like the others who had returned to the Sentinel with Lando, he had wondered what the absence of the intruder meant, but he had no time to worry about it. He had a duty. Bovo Yeagan and its millions of people. There was at least a hope of saving them, and if they could stop the destruction of Bovo Yeagan, it might well mark the beginning of the end for the Starbuster plot and the rebellions in the Corellian system. R2's beeps were tones of warning, and Luke checked his display screens. Oh, boy. Company. A flight of 8 light attack fighters was climbing out of orbit to meet him. It was not the sort of trouble Luke needed just now. Maybe he could scare them off without getting too involved. He eased back the throttle of the X-Wing and zeroed out his shields completely, shunting all the surplus engine and shield energy to his weapons system. Take it easy, R2. I'll have the shields back up before we're in range of their weapons. The trick would be to convince the LAFs that Luke and his enhanced X-Wing fighter were unbeatable, rather than just very good. Luke reached out with the Force, extending his senses as far as he could, touching the minds of the Solonian fighter pilots. He felt at once that the pilots were nervous, unsure. If he did this right, everyone would come back from this fight alive. The X-Wing leapt toward the LAFs at terrifying speed. Two of the LAFs fired at him panicky shots that went wild. Luke disengaged the firing computer, shut his eyes, and aimed the X-Wing by feel through the Force. Once. Twice. 3 times he fired. 1, 2, 3 turbo laser bursts hit the LAFs, catching each of them square in the ventral weapons pod. Suddenly, 3 of the LAFs could fly, but could not fight. The 3 veterans got the message right away, reversing course and heading for home. 2 of the other LAFs hesitated for a moment, then followed the others. That left 3 to deal with. They were rapidly closing to firing range. Luke throttled back enough to let him put his forward shields back on, but he didn't switch power back to weapons charging. R2, later. I've got another problem right now. Luke switched the fire control selector from laser to torpedo and rapidly punched in a series of commands. Suddenly, all 3 LAFs fired at once. The laser blast slammed into the X-Wing, and Luke gave thanks that he had thought to reactivate the shields when he did. He fired the reprogrammed proton torpedo square into the center of the LAF formation. Part of what Luke was counting on was the element of surprise. No one used proton torpedoes in fighter-to-fighter encounters. They were slower and less accurate, but more powerful than turbo lasers intended for use against bigger targets. The 3 LAFs fired in volley again. The next volley would punch through his shields for sure. The proton torpedo exploded precisely in the middle of the LAF formation, lighting up the sky, no doubt blinding the pilots for a second or two, and with any luck, scrambling half their instruments as well. Luke accelerated right into the blast of the proton torpedo, hanging on for dear life as he rode the maelstrom. Then suddenly, it was over. He was clear. Luke checked his detector screens. 2 of the LAFs were clearly disabled, while the 3rd seemed to be in only marginal control. Luke knew better than to stick around to see how it all came out. All right, R2, what is it? R2 took control of the main status display screen and showed him the communication status. The communications jamming is down. But why? Then the screen cleared. A grinning, stylized human skull with a knife between its teeth appeared on the screen, the symbol of the Human League. The skull faded out to be replaced by the only somewhat more pleasant features of a smiling Thrakken Salsolo. But Luke was not smiling as he listened to what the man had to say. It was evening, and Klaevitz and Drachmas were leaving the prison villa. Han had lost count of the number of times they had come to call, asking if Leia had changed her mind yet. Suddenly, the comm system in the corner came to life. A blare of static filled the room. There was Sal Solo, seated in what looked like the control room of a small military craft.
Greetings to all of you throughout the Corellian system. I am Thraken Salsolo, Diktat of Corellia. I have ordered that all communications jamming be turned off so that I might inform you of two very important new prizes that Human League troops acting under my command have won. First, let it be known that we have gained control of Drow's planetary repulsor. Soon we will control the repulsor on Corellia as well. With these powerful weapons, we shall be able to protect ourselves from all our enemies. The second prize that we have won is of a more personal nature. We have rescued the three children of Leia Organa Solo, Chief of State of the New Republic.
Han felt his heart turn to ice. He looked to Leia and saw the same horror there.
We have saved them from the aliens who held them prisoner. They are safe here with me now. I look forward to my chance to return them to their mother. First, of course, she must come out of hiding and confirm her recognition of the Corellian sector's freedom. I offer this holographic imagery to prove that I have the repulsor and have the children safe.
The screen went dark, and then showed a vast silver cylindrical space. The holocam panned to show an assault boat, and the Millennium Falcon, sitting at the bottom of the cylinder. The holoview swung back down to the floor of the chamber and zoomed in on a group of forlorn-looking figures in a force field containment. The holocam moved from face to face. Jason, looking sad but determined. Jaina, worried. Anakin glaring straight at the cam. The image faded away and returned to Thraken.
I await the answer of the Chief of State, and as Diktat of the independent sector of Corellia, I call upon all Corellians to grant me their allegiance.
Han, we can't do what he says. Leia looked to her husband, her eyes full of tears.
I know.
What good would it do, even if Leia said the words, even if she confirmed Corellian independence? At the very least, she would be driven from office, more than likely arrested on a charge of treason, and the agreement repudiated.
This is most horrifying, said Drachmas. Thraken turns even more deeply against his own blood, his own den and clan.
Klaevitz turned toward Drachmas.
What is it you are saying, Hunchaduk? No, you're not, Eminent Klaevitz. Thraken Salsolo is of the blood of Han Solo, of Leia Organa Solo's children. Impossible.
He said things that were not true for his own gain.
Impossible again. He said that...
Quiet, both of you, Mara shouted. It is possible, and he has done it. Now, respect their shock and sorrow. Be gone.
No,
shouted Han. All his anger at his cousin suddenly found a new target, one closer to home.
Stay where you are.
You,
Klaevitz,
how dare you sneer at Thraken Salsolo because he holds those of his blood hostage for gain? Darkness is of your blood, and you hold her hostage, forcing her to collaborate with you in harassing us?
Honored Solo, please, no more,
Drachmas said. Han turned to Drachmas.
There is much more. Your people speak the truth and have no skill in lies. Can you say with honesty that anything of what I say is wrong?
Drachmas seemed smaller, sadder.
No, I cannot.
Suddenly Han was inspired.
Then let us have more truth. You, Klaevitz, speak now of your repulsor. Who operates it?
Klaevitz looked suspiciously at Han.
Why, good Salonians, of course.
But whose Salonians? Are they of the Overden?
There was a moment's silence. Then Klaevitz's whiskers twitched once.
I must say no more about that.
Han felt an angry jubilation. He had won, he knew it. But he could not play the next card in this hand of Sabak. Only Drachmas could turn it over.
You are wrong, Eminent Klaevitz,
Drachmas hissed.
You must say a great deal more. Who controls the repulsor? We capitulated because you had shown your power, but the power was not yours. Who?
Docmas's eyes blazed, her claws were out, her teeth bared. Who?
It is... They are the... The cast-outs. The Sakorians. The Silonians of the Triad.
The Sakorians, Mara whispered. The Triad. I don't believe it.
If an outworlder, a human skilled in lies, had told me such a thing, I would join with the honored jade and refuse to believe it,
Drachmas said at last.
But you, as Silonian, speak the words, Glavitz, and I am forced to believe. The truth fills me with revulsion.
Glavitz dropped to all fours and cringed at Drachmas's feet, submitting to her and begging for mercy.
Rise up,
snarled Drachmas.
Rise up and come with me. Others must hear, and then the days of the Overden will be over.
Glavitz got up on her hind legs and bowed deeply to Drachmas. Drachmas did not acknowledge the bow, but turned and left the room. Glavitz followed, head down, shoulders slumped, the roles of victor and vanquished utterly reversed. What happened? Han asked. I'll explain later, Mara said. Right now, see to Leia. Leia was sobbing quietly to herself.
Oh, Han, our children. That man has our children.
I know. But he is not going to keep them. I promise you that we will... But suddenly, Leia was on her feet, an eager, faraway look in her eyes. It's Luke. Luke is coming this way. I can feel him reaching out with the Force to me.
How? The sound of Luke's X-Wing flying past rattled the windows and knocked several knick-knacks off tables. Han rushed out the open doors and saw the X-Wing swinging around to make another pass. The X-Wing made one long circuit around the villa, firing one or two bursts of turbolaser fire to encourage the guards to be on their way. The guards took very little convincing. By the time the X-Wing set down next to the Jade's fire, they were all headed straight for the nearest spot on the horizon.
Q-9, come in. Q-9, are you there?
Of course I am here. I'm here, right where you left me, upside down in a storage bin. Where else would I be?
Ebrahim's whispered voice came in via the droid's comlink system.
An interesting rhetorical question. Suffice to say that the Human League troops are asleep. And we would like you to come over here now.
With pleasure. But why have they not posted a guard? Why are they so lax?
We are at the bottom of a pit, being held inside a force field. And of the two ships available, one is non-functional, and the other is full of enemy troops. I expect they feel rather secure.
Where did you get the comlink?
Q-9 asked suspiciously.
I did not know that you had one. How do I know you are Ebrahim?
Q-9, I do believe that you have developed a paranoid streak.
You would develop one, too, if your main circuits were shorted out by a maniac child, and you were barely given a chance to double-check your repairs before you were stuck in a dark hole.
A note of impatience crept into Ebrahim's voice.
Let me see if I can put your mind somewhat at ease. I myself did not learn that Chewbacca had concealed the comlink on his person until long after we were off the ship. As for the other matter, I am indeed Ebrahim. The receipt of sale shows I paid $1,250 crowns for you. However, at the last minute, I managed to talk your owners into a discount for cash of 100 crowns, a detail which I forgot when I inadvertently reported the higher amount as a deduction on my taxes. You pointed out the discrepancy to me and threatened to turn me in if I did not correct it. Does that satisfy you?
I suppose so.
Then stop acting like a victim of paranoid dementia and get the blazes over here as quickly and as quietly as you can.
Q-9 extruded a pair of manipulator arms and slowly pushed himself straight up out of the compartment. Then he floated briskly toward the force field containment. Anakin knew exactly what had to be done to get them free.
The control panels turned away from us, but... I think there's a big slot for a sort of metal key right in the middle of it.
Yes, there is.
Step by step, Anakin guided Q-9 to adjust the control so that the side of the force field where the children were held was as low as it could go.
All right. Here goes,
Anakin said at last. He extended his arms and spread his stubby fingers as far as they would go. He shut his eyes and stepped forward until his hands were in contact with the force field. Pushing slowly, gently, he thrust his hands deeper and deeper into the weakened force field. The field around his hands began to shimmer and spark brightly at first, but then fading away, until Anakin was standing in a pushed-out bubble of the force field.
Help me,
he said to his brother and sister. Jason and Jaina stepped cautiously forward into the extruded bubble. They pushed together, stretching the field, until the tip of Anakin's finger was outside the field. The children held hands and slowly moved out from the field. The stretched-out part of the force field shimmered and sparked one last time, and then retracted, merging into the rest of the field as if there had never been a distortion in its surface.
That was impossible, of course, said Q-9. No one can walk through a force field that way.
We didn't go through it, really, Anakin said. It was more like we stretched it out until there was room between the field, and then I just pushed the parts apart and went through.
Anakin, what about Chewbacca
and Ebrahim and Aunt Marcia? Asked Jaina.
Anakin shook his head.
I don't think I can do it from this side. Not to pull people through.
Can you do anything with the control panel? Jaina asked.
No. I can make stuff do what it's supposed to do. The lock's doing what it's supposed to do. It's already working.
Ebrahim spoke up.
If we indeed cannot get out, the children must attempt to escape on their own. With your help, of course, Q-9.
How? How are we supposed to get away?
By flying in the Millennium Falcon, of course.
The alarm buzzer squawked wildly in Tendra Rezant's ship, the gentleman caller. What had broken down this time? She checked all the displays but saw nothing but a green board. Then she remembered. She had installed this alarm herself, the one that went off when the Navicomputer detected the interdiction field going down. The interdiction field going down. She scrambled into the pilot's seat and set to work setting the Navicomputer. She had to move fast. Whoever controlled the interdiction field might well bring it back up again at any time. She would go to center point. The last she had heard from Lando, it had seemed he was heading that way. Admiral Ocelage himself met the Lady Luck when she landed on the hangar deck of the intruder. He led the crew to his private quarters, where Lieutenant Belindi Kalenda briefed him about what they had discovered on Centerpoint.
So if I understand you correctly, Ocelage said, if we possessed a planetary repulsor in time to deflect the hyperspace tractor repulsor shot from Centerpoint, then that would save all the good people of Bovo Yeagan. And perhaps, just incidentally, win us the war. Do I have that about right?
Just about right, sir, said Lieutenant Kalenda. However, it is more than a question of possessing the repulsor. It is knowing how to use it, and I'm not sure Thrakan Sal Solo is able to control it.
But they fired it already.
Not really, sir. It was an uncontrolled startup. There was a massive burst of uncontrolled repulsor radiation, that's all. The Salonian repulsor shot was much more controlled. And there's another reason. Remember, his assault boat went into the repulsor after it was fired. We're only assuming it was his techs who fired it.
After seeing that broadcast he made, I'll tell you who I think set it off, said Lando. The children. I think they managed to turn it on by accident. The repulsor burst attracted Thrakken's attention the same as it did yours, and he got there first.
Oh, don't be absurd, Ocelage said.
But all this is beside the point. Sal Solo has the repulsor now. And I have an assault force preparing to go in and take it from him.
Ocelage pushed a button on his desktop comm unit.
Yes, what is it?
Sir, the interdiction field is coming down, and we have received communication from Source A. He is on the...
One moment,
Ocelage stabbed another button on the comm, cutting off the speaker. He picked up the handset and turned to the group before him.
My apologies to you all. I gave my word to keep discussions with this source private.
While they waited for Admiral Ocelage, Lando, Kalenda, and Gariel went up to the bridge to get a better view of what was going on. What could be seen from there did not exactly make Lando happy. The tactical schematic display showed the Sentinel, the Defender, the relative positions of Talus, Trollus, and Centerpoint, and at least 50 unidentified ships, with more appearing at every moment.
The Sicurian fleet, Lando said to Kalenda. The Triad fleet that Tendra warned us about.
But what are they doing here? Kalenda demanded. Whose side are they on?
I think a better question might be who is on their side.
Admiral Ocelage had appeared beside them.
I expect that fleet is in search of the people who have caused them the most trouble in this system. And I'm afraid our little squadron does not meet that qualification.
Who's caused them more trouble than we have? Gariel demanded. The Human League, Kalenda answered. The Human League hijacked their whole operation, or at least tried to.
Exactly. The Sicurians, or at least the Triad who rule that world, they were the ones behind it all.
The Triad? Gariel asked.
That is the name given to the joint dictatorship that rules Sicoria. One human, one Drow, one Salonian. No one knows anything about the three dictators, not even their names. I believe they discovered the secret of Centerpoint and recruited malcontents on the various worlds to front revolutions for them. Something they could hide behind while digging up the repulsors.
How do you know all this? Kalenda asked.
I know almost none of it, Ocelage said. I am guessing. I am also guessing that something went wrong with the plan. And the something was named Thraken Salsolo. Somehow or another, he inveigled his way into the inner reaches of the Starbuster plot, and he betrayed it.
But what are you going to do about those ships? Gariel asked Ocelage. They've been continuing to arrive while we've been talking here. There must be 75 of them out there. Shouldn't we be getting back to Centerpoint to help out Defender and Sentinel?
No. The intruder must complete her mission here before rejoining the other ships. The assault on the repulsor is still our top priority.
Han Solo paced the ground before the villa prison where he, Luke, Mara, Leia, and Drachmas had just had dinner.
Honored Drachmas, please, Han said, explain to me why it's in our best interest to just sit here and wait. Very well. The three things that matter most to Salonians are honor, consensus, and the Den. The Triad Salonians on Sicuria descend from the despised offshoot of a bloodline discredited long ago. Some of them tried to lie and cheat their way into a position of advantage over other members of their own den. They were kicked off Corellia by my ancestors, the Hunchuzuk, and also removed from Salonia by the Overden. They formed a new den, under a new name, because the old name was utterly dishonored. Even now I must not speak it.
Han said, if I've got this straight, now that Klaevitz has admitted to being in the pay of the Triad with this despised group, that changes everything, right?
Right. The Overden achieved a consensus favorable to themselves by trickery. And by involving themselves with a dishonored and nameless den. Even worse, the nameless den was linked to Triad, and Triad linked to Salsolo, who kidnaps his own. Now, Hunchuzuk will take over.
But the Sicurian Salonians are still the ones running the repulsor, Luke objected.
Yes, and so we must wait. We will talk with Sicurian scums, nasty though job will be. Finally, peer pressure on Sicurians to give up will be too much. They will cooperate with Hunchuzuk, tell us how to run machinery as part of their penance for being on the losing side.
How long do we have to wait? Asked Luke. Drachmas shook her head.
An hour? A day? A month? A year?
Luke frowned. An hour we have, maybe even a day, but not much longer. Center Point Station is going to fire at Bovo Yagen in just over 84 hours.
Should I reset the breaker now? Jason asked.
Not yet. Just a sec, said Anakin. One more to stick in.
He was lying on his stomach, leaning over the open underfloor access panel. He stared down into the morass of wires and cables and circuit boards, then made some adjustments.
All right. Push the reset.
There was the slightest of pauses, and then the green status light came on. Jason breathed a sigh of relief, then turned to Q9.
It worked, Chewbacca. We ought to have repulsors and sublight engines now.
There was something more than a bit incongruous about Chewbacca's voice coming from Q9's speaker.
We have to hurry,
Q9 translated. Jason got to his feet.
Okay, we're hurrying.
Jason paused at the entrance to the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. He had been up here many times before, of course, but this was different. No one was keeping an eye on him this time, or making sure he didn't press any buttons, or shooing him away. No, this time he was here to fly the ship. The very idea terrified him. He took his place at the pilot's station, adjusting the seat as high and as far forward as it would go.
All right, Chewie, we're switching over to the ship's main comm system now.
He reached over to the comm panel and threw the appropriate switch.
That's a relief, said Q9.
Jason glanced behind him and made sure that Anakin, seated in the observer seat behind Jaina, had his belt on. Q9 had clamped himself to a stanchion.
Everyone set?
Not quite, said Jaina.
Those humanly guys are going to come after us the moment we take off. Maybe we should sort of slow down good old cousin Thrakken a little bit.
Wait a second, protested Jason.
But Jaina had already activated the fire controls for the Falcon's ventral laser cannon.
I figure one shot at the force field generator, then I re-aim and take a crack at the assault boat.
The force field generator, Jason said. Suppose you miss and hit Chewie and the Drawls.
I can't hit them. They're behind the force field, remember? You just be ready to get us moving straight up the repulsors the second I tell you to.
Jason shook his head doubtfully.
All right, but remember whose idea it was to start shooting.
Jaina stared down at the gunnery display, making minute adjustments to the ventral laser's aim.
Here we go. One, two, three.
A blast of fire roared from the ventral laser cannon, catching the force field generator square in the center of the control panel. The force field winked out of existence. Jaina swung the laser cannon around in the general direction of the assault boat and fired again. The shot missed the boat, with a flash of light bouncing off the reflective walls of the chamber to ricochet around a dozen times before it dissipated. She fired again and scored a glancing hit. Jason could see Chewbacca and the two Drawl running for the nearest entrance to the side caverns.
Jaina, the way those shots are ricocheting, you're more likely to hit Chewie than Thrakken. You're right. Let's get out of here. Everyone hang on. I've never done this before.
He pulled back on the repulsor power control, and the Millennium Falcon lumbered up into the sky.
Behind us, Anakin shouted. Look at the detector screen.
There was Thrakken's assault boat hot on their heels. A blast of laser flared past the Falcon's starboard side, and Jason heeled the ship up, flipping her over. The Falcon was suddenly climbing at a 45-degree angle of attack, but with the cockpit pointed down instead of up. The accidental maneuver seemed to have shaken Thrakken off their tail, at least for the moment, but he would be back, and he'd start shooting at them again.
Shields up! Jason shouted. Where are the shield controls? Jaina asked. Chewie moved them when he rewired the cockpit, Anakin said from the observer seat. Under your left hand, sort of, the panel with the big red buttons.
Where?
I don't see it. I'll get it.
Anakin undid his seat restraint, hopped out of his seat, and wiggled in between the two pilot stations. He reached in and flicked the safeties off a row of red switches, pressed down on a big red button, and twisted two dials.
All right, now shields up.
The shudder that ran through the ship told Jason that Anakin had gotten the shields up just in time, and that Cousin Thrakken's aim was getting better.
Shoot!
Thrakken shouted.
Shoot! Blast your eyes!
The boat's captain, a fat, bald man named Thrag, was used to taking orders from Thrakken, but he was not afraid of him. He protested.
But they're your own blood relatives!
I'd shoot at them myself. I'm not hypocrite enough to pretend there's a difference.
Thrag turned his attention from his flying and looked Thrakken up and down.
Do your own dirty work, then, and welcome to it.
And Thrag switched over gunnery control.